Thank you so very, 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 very much. I am extremely honored and humbled to be here. It is not something that I take lightly. It's not the way my life was supposed to go. Trust me. I kind of laugh on my mama, you know. My mother's not here. But I know my mama's in heaven looking down, grinning, because her baby is standing in Vanderbilt talking to people about, I love to tell the truth and shame the devil, and there's no point in us trying to act like this is not a big deal. This is a big deal. So you all just bear with me as I try to act like I belong. I'm going to start off with this thing here that Tremaine, can you just stand up for me, Tremaine? I know you don't like to. This is Tremaine Maxie, and there's Carlos Coleman right there. There's my sister Glow. There's my sister-in-law. And my pastor's two daughters are here, too, to make sure I stay on track. You see? And one of our sisters, Vern's aunt, lives here in Tennessee, and she's also here. So we're grateful. You see, it mean a lot to us. We brought our family. We went ahead and brought our family here with us. But we are very... very proud to be here. Let me tell you something that happened to us recently. I was recently, January 10th, I was 60 years old. Now that's huge. Big time. 60 years old, and my co-workers, my associates, and my team members, they decided that they wanted to put a little something together about parts of my life and went trying to get them, trying to find things about pre-Tupac. I lived about four lives, but this this one is the pre-Tupac life. And where did they find the information at, do you think? Right here, Vanderbilt Television News Archive. They were able to find news footage of the day I was arrested, while I was on trial, and the day I was acquitted. And that is a big deal for us. So I don't know who we give this to, but in appreciation of that, because I want you to appreciate it, I want you to know, I don't know all about Vanderbilt, but we found this. Is it the Google? Googling? We discovered this information on the internet, that Vanderbilt had it and that we could have access to it. I can't imagine what else is in those archives. I know you're all using them, aren't you? I know you are. You just don't want to say it out loud, but it's all right. It's all right. I know you're using them now, and you're going to use them a lot in the future, because there is a difference in reading something in print and seeing the news for that day, because you get the context that, you know, is kind of unexplainable 30, 40 years later. So what I have here is a check for $1,000 that we would like to donate to the Vanderbilt Television News Archive. Who's here who may receive it? It's important that we support these things. So having taken care of that little housekeeping, I know that you know what my name is. I know that you, some of you saw, did anybody see the movie, Tupac Resurrection? Quite a few people saw it. Thank you for seeing it. This year is the 10th anniversary of my son's death. When he was taken suddenly and violently, changed all of my family's life. Tupac was to my family, as you might imagine, the brightest star in the heavens. He was the person who, when he walked in the door, everybody came wherever he was. We wanted to know all his stories. He always had us laughing. We always, you know, he'd tell us everything he did. He used to tell us, I hope nobody in here had no relationship with him, because Tupac told. I'm telling you, Tupac would call his aunt. I told him, don't call me with that. He would call his aunt Glow Up and tell him who he was out on a date with and who was, we kind of basically lived a big old life through Tupac, you know. When he left, it was a hurt that was unimaginable, and a hole, sister just a little while ago said, I know you got a hole in your heart. She's right. We had a hole in our heart from that minute that felt like it was a cavern. And, you know, I know that someone here, probably most people here, has lost somebody. My loss is no bigger than yours. So, you know, when you felt that loss in your heart, trust me, I felt it really, really huge in my heart. And then, you know, my background is all anger, isn't it? Come on, tell the truth, shame devil. It's all anger. It was important that my anger not tarnish my son's life. It was important that the person who had the small amount of energy and strength it takes in order to pull a trigger and extinguish a life, it was important that that person not have a victory in Tupac's death. Literally, for 10 years, I've been working to keep the devil from having a victory. And that is literally the truth. Because he died early. I hear sometimes people say, well, you know, most of his albums was put out after he was dead. They say it as though that was a bad thing. Picture that. Wouldn't you love it if somebody in your household who was unfortunate enough to be taken from you, wouldn't you love it if they had worked so much in their little 25 years? If they had worked so much that you had 13 albums at least worth of material to put out, if it was anybody else, they would say, what a genius that boy was. But here, and I'm not whining, look here, because I don't complain. I ain't got no complaints, but it's all right to tell the truth, ain't it? Anybody else, he would be on a throne. But still, if we could just put a little dirt on it, it would be all right. But let me tell you what you can't put dirt on. You cannot put dirt on 75 million albums. You cannot put dirt. Because let me tell you why. I want you to be clear. We live in America. I know you know that. I know somebody told you. This is a capitalist society, is it not? What makes it run? What is 75 million units? Money. 75 million units in capitalist America. 75 million units. I'm going to repeat it. I repeat it for a reason, not because it's a bragging thing to do, but because when someone looks at 75 million units sold by somebody and act like there's something wrong with that, you know, you do kind of wonder, right? But don't worry, I never even listened to her. They say stuff like, why she put out that album like that and she didn't put out this one like that? As though they know somebody who got an album to put out. That's how I see it, you know? That's how I see it. And this is fun for me today, to be able to talk about this, if this is all right. I got some other stuff to talk about. To just talk about this with you, because when you, if you cared enough to come in here to hear me talk, you at least like them a little bit. I'm sure about that. Somebody in here like them a little bit, you know. So when you're reading, when you're reading those remarks, and when people are saying those remarks, I like to look at them and say, well, what did you do? What's the newest thing you've done? Can you imagine that? Tupac put all of the albums he put out. I know people that's been, Tupac's been gone for 10 years. He put out an album every year. Every year. Not physically here. An album out every year. And I know artists, I hear them on TV all the time. They say they got to work so hard to get that next one out. Yeah, it take them a year or two. Yeah, because they got to think really hard. It's got to come to them, you know? Give that boy his due, is all I'm saying. Give credit where credit is due, not because he my son, but look here, 75 million units is 75 million units. That's a lot of money at $10 to $20 a whop, is it? That's capital in this country. So we're grateful for that, and we just wanted to make that clear. Having said all of that, on this table, you see all those brochures. Do we don't have a lot for everybody in the building? Is that what it is? We do? So why don't we take them and give them to the people? How are they going to get them? You all make sure you get one of these for me. This is our newsletter at the center, the Tupac Amaru Shakur Center for the Arts. And what it lists is who we are, what we stand for, and it lists our programs. Every month we have something different going on. If you are in Atlanta, if your sister's in Atlanta, your cousin, your friend, anybody you know going to Atlanta, send them to the center. And if you know some children, some young people that are in need of a little uplift in their hearts, bring them to the center, or at least call us, okay? Because that literally is what we're there for. Some of the programs we have a book club, we do community service, we have an Easter egg hunt, we clean up the Peace Garden. If you all want to come help us clean up, you could come in April. We have a health community day, we have a hunger drive, we always are collecting food, clothing, warm coats, and things like that for the other people in our community. We have a performing arts program, which is the way that we began. We began the second year after Tupac died. We were, like, the first 2 years, we were given anniversary programs, and then for his birthday. And then on the third year, we decided that no one was really being helped by those programs. It was a nice show because we would bring in lots of talent, and it would cost a lot of money, but it wasn't. After tomorrow, it was nothing. And so we started originally a summer camp with young people, and that summer camp was started, I think, in 1998. We've been holding it every year since then. And what we started out doing, we do the whole year now, but what we started out doing is in June and July, we would work with the children, usually for about 7 weeks. And the last week, the last 3 days, they would give, and they still do, they give a performance at a professional theater. They write it, they compose it, and they perform their work. They use both Tupac's work and their own work. They write monologues and things about the things that they are going through, and they dramatize them on the stage. They are very, very good. We are very proud of them. And as a matter of fact, next week they're going to Seattle with us for a Black History program. We have a college and technical schools tour, and we have a mentoring and career day program. We have workshops all the time. We also, I don't know if we convened the first one, but we have been hosting and partly sponsoring a sports and entertainment foundation coalition where all the wonderful people that you know in the industry, in the NFL, in the NBA, that give back to the community, Usher, Chris Draft, there's a lot of different people who have foundations. They all came together. We've all formed this coalition of foundations. And what we do is, instead of overlapping work, if they are working with someone who needs what we have, they send them to us, and we do likewise. And we meet. We have been meeting pretty regularly now so that we can maybe be more ambitious in the things that we can do. We are trying to consolidate our money so that we make a bigger difference. And that's really a pretty big deal to have happening there. We are this year going to have at the center an arts film screening 2 times a year in March and in October, where independent filmmakers, if any of you are filmmakers, you can please submit your films to be shown at our film screenings. Eventually, prayerfully, we'll be able to also have a film festival, but for right now, that's what we do. In different parts of the country where we go, where I go and speak, we try to, when we leave, we try to partner with groups in the place that we left and continue to do the work with them. And in that, we work with, in Seattle, a professor at the university there, in cooperation with the public library. Her name is Georgia Robbins. She has a Tupac reader group, and they use Tupac's writings to do different things. And in Chicago, we try to partner with, in some way, the Enterprising Kitchen, the Dusable, am I saying that wrong? Museum of African History, American History at the University of Chicago. In Baltimore, with the Brother to Brother Mentoring Program, the DTLR Reader Group, and the Baltimore School of the Arts, which is the school that Tupac went to in Baltimore. And just as an aside to that, this year, Jada Pinkett Smith and Will Smith gave $1 million to the Baltimore School of the Arts for a theater auditorium, which will be named the Jada Pinkett Smith Auditorium in honor of her friend, Tupac Amaru Shakur. So we're very grateful for that. In New York City, in Harlem, we work with the Faison Firehouse. George Faison is the original director, maybe even producer. I think he was the director, maybe choreographer. I get people's jobs mixed up, of The Wiz on Broadway. And he now has a theater company for young people in Harlem. He has an old firehouse that he's converted into a place where he works with young people. And we partner with him and with the Hip Hop Project in New York. In North Carolina, we work with the We Care Workers, which is a group of young people from my church. And they go. We just started this summer, and what they do is they go to the elderly people in our neighborhoods. I know y'all in Tennessee, y'all got some too. And the elderly people who don't have young people or somebody there in their house, they paint their outside of the house, repaint it, you know, clean the yards out. You know how elderly people always got a lot of stuff that needs to be moved. They move stuff. They just do whatever they can to help the elderly people in our community. In Turks and Caicos, we've been partnering with the Performing Arts Program, and this year, Jasmine Guy sponsored a film festival there. Now, having done all of that listing, What I'm going to do now is read to you from Jasmine Guy's book, if that's okay. I'm just going to read a little bit from the book, and then I'll talk a little bit more if you want me to, and then you could ask me questions if you want. It's all good with me. I don't want to cheat you. You know, I went someplace one time, and it was very strange. I forgot where it was, but it was, where was that at? Remember that? It was somewhere real cold, is one thing I know. It was really, I think it was Wisconsin. And they had asked me to be a part of a lecture series. I'm who I am. I always say I'm not an entertainer, everyone. I don't have skills like that. And when I speak, I basically do what I do. You know, I kind of speak and I tell you about myself. I'll tell you anything. I don't really care. And then after that, I ask people to ask questions. But they said I didn't speak long enough, so they wouldn't have me back. So you all, if I don't speak long enough, let me know before I leave the stage and I'll say some more stuff, okay? Now, in this, I'm just going to read the last part of this book because it's my favorite part, because it don't have no dirt in it. The other parts is about my drug addiction and all my garbage, so of course I wouldn't choose that as my fave. The other thing I have to ask you to do is I have to ask you to pretend, and this is big, this is really big. I need for you all to pretend that I am Jasmine Guy reading to you. Now, you know, that's a stretch. It's a pretty big stretch, but you can do it. I have faith. So I'm going to read as Jasmine Guy, who wrote this book. Remember, I didn't write anything. As I told you about my talent level. The next time I'm in Atlanta, I keep my promise to Afeni and take my daughter to see her. She greets us on her front porch and reaches for me. I pass the American flag hanging from one of the wooden posts and take note. It's been there since 9/11, so it's not my first time seeing it. An American flag always catches my eye, but the irony of one hanging from the Shakur front porch is especially arresting. The idea that this woman, once labeled an enemy of the state, once accused of conspiracy to bomb Abercrombie and Fitch, now exposes her patriotic solidarity so publicly, reveals the danger of reducing complex personalities to a single label. People are layered. Before I knew the real reason for her to hang the American flag, I had my own theory. I think the flag for Afeni represents the people, not necessarily the government, and that the people for Afeni now went beyond the disenfranchised of Harlem and the Bronx. The people are those attacked. The people are those dead and gone. Afeni is always down with the underdog. And today, the underdog is the victim of 9/11. She is not down with the terrorist murderers of Al-Qaeda. She sympathizes with the people of America. My theory, I discover, is a bit esoteric in comparison to Afeni's real reason for displaying the American flag. Deeply moved by the loss of life in the World Trade Center, she told me this story. Deloitte and Touche, our auditors, were located in the World Trade Center on September 11th when the towers came down, and they had to leave the building. They panicked and ran out of their offices. And then, and I have chills right now saying this to you, and then they remembered they had left Tupac stuff on the desk. Jasmine, they went back and got his shit. Yes, they did. They went back and got his stuff off. I got effing door desk. That was, I've been working on my cursing, but I was still real bad when this was going on. I'll save you that and just say effing, okay? Afeni slapped her thigh. Then they left the building. God is such a good God. He works in all these ways and places. Can you imagine that? She looked at me. I thought about it. I thought about what they did, and I said, I would never have done that. I was real humbled by that. They ran back and got all of my son's stuff. Now, as I pass Fannie's American flag, I think of those people in that office that ran back to get Tupac's papers. Every account of money going in and money going out, every last bit of proof of that man's work, they went back and got it. Their lives were spared, too. I think of them as I pass Fannie's flag for a moment. And that is why it is hanging, so we don't forget. Now, I'm just going to skip over a little bit to another part I like. And this will bring us on into the close, which you'll be happy for. All right. Jasmine is still at my house, and, you know, I'm having fun with her daughter. And she's about to leave. She's about to leave, so I say to her, "Thank you, Jack, baby. I know you have to go. I just needed to see your child. I know that's why. I know," she says, "that's why I brought her by. And I needed to see you," a Fannie adds. "And that makes me want to cry, although I am not sure why. I feel tight in my throat, so I don't respond. I just let a Fannie do the talking, which was easy to do since she had something to say. I'm used to crying with a Fannie. We've been through a lot of life together, so I don't know why I can't cry now. I guess I don't want to. I want to be happy right now and enjoy the kids, the pine trees, and the smell of toast. Sometimes I feel like I hold her heart in my hands, and I must be very careful. I know a Fannie's pain, but I know her joy, too. I rely heavily also on my belief in the sacrifice of Christ," a Fannie says. "The utter beauty of his sacrifice, the grace that flows from that. I think if it hadn't been for that one act, I just don't know where human beings would be. Thank God he did that one act. I believe it made it possible for us to be forgiven without having to do anything to have redemption except to say, 'God, can you please help me?' How easy it is to get God's attention. To me, that's the most beautiful of them all, the redemption of that innocent blood that fell on that cross. For me, with all the S that I've done in my life, it's the grace of God that took the desire for cocaine out of me. I got myself into crack, but it was God who brought me out. God couldn't get my attention until he gave me that crack pipe. The only way my stupid, stubborn brain would get it. And these are not new lessons. Other people have been knowing this, but I had to be brought to my knees. There's a long moment before I speak. As I wait for the swell in my throat to go down, "I hear you, Fannie," I finally say, and I did hear her, as I hear my Nana, my mother, my father, as I hear all the great teachers in my life that have pulled me aside and out of earshot of classmates or fellow dancers to tell me something I needed to hear. "I hear you, Fannie," like I hear my mother say, "embrace your beauty," like I hear my father say, "You are more than a performer, Jasmine. You are a full human being." As I hear Jeffrey Holder say, "We don't let any man take your spirit." Kelvin Rotardier, director of the Alvin Ailey Workshop Company, say, "Be consistent." Mary Barnett say, "Lift your eyes." I hear you, Fannie, say, "Live life from here. Pick up from where I am now. I give my experience to you so you don't have to go down like I had to learn it. I know you hear me, Jasmine. I just had to say it. I can't keep nothing heavy on my heart no more." I gather my child and walk the long drive to my car. The grandbaby screamed goodbyes from the front porch and waved with passion. "Oh, don't forget," a Fannie says, running behind me to the car. "Sweet Honey in the Rock at the Wilshire on December 7th. Call Dina, a Fannie's music lawyer. She's getting tickets, and we're all going. You must come, Jasmine. Sweet Honey in the Rock." She hugs me and looks me in the eye. "You must come." On that crisp December night, I felt so appreciative, so glad she invited me, particularly to this concert on this night with her. The five women of Sweet Honey and the Rock were alive with fire, red, orange, an explosion of beauty and soul. Each woman is so different. Isaye Maria Barnwell has deep, chocolate, smooth, glowing skin with smiling eyes. She stands strong, grounded, with high breasts and cheekbones reaching past her height. She sings low, lower than I've heard any woman ever sing. Her voice is round and rhythmic as she holds the bottom. Aisha Khalil is like a bird, a long-legged, far-reaching ibis. She dances as she sings, as if her body cannot speak from only one language. Her sister, Natanju Balade Kasal, equals her stature. Like runway models, they are stunning and thin, but their power transcends the Atlantic. At times, they seem to call back to Africa, and at other moments, they seem to sing to us from the motherland instead of America. Sometimes, it is hard to know which coast of the Atlantic these sisters sing from. And Carol Mallard, the fourth woman, is warm and funky. Her golden caramel skin radiates joy, fun joy. Like someone on the verge of a party. Her face is bright, her features are big, round, and expressive. I hear her sultry alto through the pulse of the background rhythms. I recognize her voice because I worked with Carol years ago in a show called Beehive at the Village Gate in New York. I played with her baby Jordan in the dressing rooms of the Gate Cellar, and now Jordan is a man. And Bernice Johnson Reagan steps forward from the group and speaks to the audience. She is smart, political, funny, and wise. She is the founder of Sweet Honey and the Rock and the keeper of the voice. Of this beautiful group of women, she says, "I walk Sweet Honey in the Rock as a path, a discipline. I do not create the path, which has been carried out by the living and dying of those who walked it before me with their lives. But I make my own tracks on this mountainous road. And Sweet Honey is that way. It is that path." Bernice Johnson steps back a few steps to rejoin the arc of the other four women. And as she starts to sing, a deep, brown, willful tone reaches us from her gut. I have a revelation. This voice, the voice of Bernice Johnson Reagan, is Afeni's voice. If Afeni could sing, she would sing in the voice of Bernice Johnson Reagan. I know because Afeni sits to my left tonight, and I feel everything change when Reagan begins to sing. Afeni calls up her own voice and sings right along with Bernice Johnson Reagan. Their voices lock like praying hands desperate to find God. Afeni knows every word, every inflection Bernice Johnson Reagan delivers.
There she goes.
We who believe in freedom cannot rest. We who believe in freedom cannot rest until it comes. In my ear, to my left, I hear Afeni sing. She raises her hands towards Sweet Honey and sings through her pain and her triumphs. She sings through the death of her son. Until the killing of black men, black mother's son, is as important as the killing of white men, white mother's son. We who believe in freedom cannot rest. She sings through her panther years. That what touches me most is that I had a chance to work with people, passing on to others that which was passed on to me. Through the healing of her daughter's spirit, to me, young people come first. They have the courage where we fail. Through realizing the dream of the Tupac Amaru Shakur Center for the Arts, where little children like young Tupac can go for artistic nourishment. It's when the reins are in the hand of the young who dare to run against the storm. We who believe. The chorus swells and I close my eyes. I fill up with this call to freedom. I fill up until I feel the water rise in my eyes. I have come to a sacred place tonight with Sweet Honey and the Rock. I have been here before in church, listening to my father, in theaters watching Alvin Ailey, in arenas with Anita Baker, and I am grateful I am here now. Afanis is the only voice I hear for a moment, singing in my left ear. She possesses the next verse as if it were written just for her. It is her testimony. I am a woman who speaks in a voice, and I must be heard. At times, I can be quite difficult. I bow to no man's word. We who believe in freedom cannot rest. This is Afeni. This song is written for her as Afeni's story is written for me. At this moment, I am so grateful she has let me know her. I reach for her hand as she sings away. I grab it to say thank you. Thank you for trusting me. Thank you for falling in front of me and for getting back up. Thank you for believing in me, what I could not see for myself. Thank you for inviting me here tonight. She squeezes my hand back without looking my way and never drops a note of the song. You're welcome. When I was your age, this is Black History Month, a good thing to know. When I was your age, I could count on this hand the number of published African-American women writers that there were. Do you know that? Today, there are many writers. But me, I encourage every person I see, please write. Please write. Please write. Write everything. Write everything because you're writing history. The way that we get history is that you write it. If you don't write it, all we have is the television account of what happened. You must write about your life, about what is going on with you every day, about your failures and your triumphs, because somebody can learn something from them. So writing is important. I do want to read something else to you, if it's all right. I rediscovered it again, and I just thought it was really amazing. This is a speech given in 1851. I know you all are familiar with it because you've been in school. You're in the South. I know darn well. They made you read it 90 times. It don't make no difference. I don't really care. I'll be repetitive. We're going to do this one again. We're going to do it because I think that it's interesting to note where we came from. Because sometimes we don't know. Sometimes we think we only did this thing, when in point of fact, we did many things. Do you understand? So the reason I'm reading this, as opposed to, for instance, something about from that period that would be about getting out of slavery, is because I like choices and I like different stuff, you know? So what we're going to read is the most wonderful Sojourner's words. Y'all know about Sojourner, right? Who don't? Anybody don't? If you don't, it's good for me because I could read you this little preamble. If you do, I won't read the preamble. Read the preamble, don't read it. Read the preamble. Thank y'all. Y'all so nice. I ain't gonna say, I keep getting off the point. Sojourner Truth was born into slavery in New York State, but was given her freedom when New York emancipated slaves in 1827. She was originally named Isabella, but changed it to Sojourner Truth in 1843, when she became an evangelist, preaching her religious and abolitionist ideas. But when the fledgling women's movement started in 1848, so that women might have the right to vote, she became one of few African-American participants. Nevertheless, her impact was significant. Using plain frank language, she presented a compelling case for women's rights. This speech was given at the 1851 Ohio Women's Rights Convention in Akron. I compare myself right now to Sojourner, not that like I'm great like that or I got some great thing to say to you like that. I don't mean like that, not the event. But but the beauty of Sojourner, who came from where she came from, being able to go into this conference and to capture people's attention with the little that she came with. She made the little into a lot. This is a very short speech, but trust me, they felt her that day. Well, children, where there's so much racket, there must be something out of kilter. I think that twixt the Negroes of the South and the women of the North, all talking about rights, the white men will be in a fix pretty soon. But what's all this here talking about? That man over there says that women need to be helped in the carriages and lifted over ditches and have to be helped to the best places everywhere. Nobody ever helps me into carriages or over mud puddles or gives me any best place. And ain't I a woman? Look at me. Look at my arm. I've plowed and planted and gathered in the barns and no man could head me. And ain't I a woman? I could work as much and eat as much as a man when I could get it, when I could get it, and bear the lashes well. And ain't I a woman? I've born 13 children and seen all of them sold off to slavery. And when I cried out with my mother's grief, number Jesus heard me, and ain't I a woman? Then they talk about this thing in the head. What's this they call it? Uh-oh. Someone tells her, someone like, you know, the smart people. They tell her it's intellect. She said, oh, that's it, honey. What's that got to do with women's rights or Negro rights? If my cup won't hold but a pint and yours holds a quart, wouldn't you be mean not to let me have my little half measure full? My God, woman. Then that little man in black there, he says women can't have as much rights as the men because Christ wasn't a woman. I love this one. Well, where did Christ come from? Where did your Christ come from? From God and a woman. Man had nothing to do with him. Oh, Jesus. Sojourner was deep, wasn't she? Sojourner could shut him up. I'm trying to tell you, but she was something. If the first woman God ever made was strong enough to turn the world upside down all alone, these women together ought to be able to turn it back and get it right upside again. And now they is asking to do it, and men better let them. Obliged to you for hearing me now. And now old Sojourner ain't got nothing more to say. And Sojourner went and sat down. Now isn't that wonderful? So when they say to you, I heard this too, this is the same thing, just like with the Tupac with the 75 millions, when they say, well, why are we still doing black history? Shouldn't we get rid of it now? Picture that. So they could forget Sojourner over my dead body. We need, We need to remember Sojourner. You know, we need to remember the people who fought and were, look at the dignity of this woman. 1851. She had nothing, but she could still do this. And I'm saying that she didn't have nothing, but she could still do this because I expect every one of you all, when you come up out of this wonderfully prestigious university, and those of you who are in Tennessee State, this, I got it. When you all come up out these places of wonderful, hallowed learning, I don't want to hear no excuses. I don't want to hear what the white man won't do for you. I don't want to hear it. I'm not interested. Y'all not going to do that, are y'all? Not going to do that for me, right? You ain't going to tell me about how unfair things are you? Because let me make this. I usually do this when I first start off and I forgot. Let me say this now. But you all don't need it, but I say it anyway because it ain't fair to keep it from you. I share light. You know how you think things are really bad? It's bad, right? In your where you come from, things are bad. Well, not where you come from, anywhere. Today, we can look anywhere. It's all bad, ain't it? It's worse than that. Things are worse than you think. Worse, much worse than you think. But regardless and irrelevant, remember Sojourner. It don't make no difference how bad they are. It is our responsibility to look it square in the face and say, what should I start with? Where shall I begin? You hear what I'm saying? That is what it is that all of us must do. You know, the thing that I feel like I bring to other people is this is what I could bear witness to. I could bear witness to this. You take it back to anybody that you know in a similar situation. If someone violently takes your loved one, you can live your life without hating them, without seeking revenge, without trying to get it back. You can do this thing. You can turn that garbage, that pain, that awfulness, you could turn it into something else. We must challenge each other to do that. If you're gonna like me at all, like me for that. Like me and say, when you're in that situation, as you will be, what can I do different with this pain in my gut? What can I do different with this pain? What can I do with this awful feeling inside of me? Ask it that moment. I'm not asking you to do something I didn't do. Remember that. I did do that. When my son was laying there, yes, indeed. Tupac left here about 4 or 5 times. They revived him 4 or 5 times. That last time I asked him to please allow him to go. I truly did. Leave him alone. Let him go. God gave Tupac a birth date. All the years in between for him to do what he could do, and an end date. No one in here has a different situation. No one. Every one of us is gonna die. Now, what is the question? What are we gonna do between now and that day? What? Besides being mad. Don't be mad no more. Things are very bad. I make that statement for a reason. It is ugly. It is every bit of that. My life can show you that anger won't fix it. Anger won't fix it. I did that with the Black Panther Party. I panthered it up. Trust me. I did the whole thing. I did it all of it. Anger will not take you any place except where it took me, crack pipe. Crack pipe. That's where it took me. Because when you finish being angry and you can't effectuate the change that you're so angry about, what happens then? Now you feel, okay, got a hole, got to feel a hole. No, we can't change everything. But what we can do is every day every day we can get up and promise God, promise Him that on this day I'm going to do the best that I can to live a good, clean life, to not lie, to not steal, to not make excuses. The way that we get through this period is by going back to the old rules. We got too many new rules, y'all. They don't work. It's new rules, new ways of doing things, and do you see any of them working? No, they don't. Young people your age are dying faster. We're not even talking about the war. We're not even in Iraq or Afghanistan. Here, on this soil, dying quicker than they have ever died in the history of this country. Do you understand that? Committing suicide faster than ever. There was a time when I didn't know but two or three people that had taken their own life. That's been gone. I know a bunch of children, who've taken their lives in 50 million different ways, committed straight up suicide. I do this, come out, talk, expose myself. I'm concerned about your lives. I'm concerned about your lives. I'm concerned about your priorities. I ask you if, because I know you all are bright and serious, so I seriously am saying these things to you. I'm asking you, some of you are going to be in politics. Is that right? I know it's so. I can't be in a room this big and nobody ain't going to be in it. Otherwise, we're going to have a workshop. Somebody must be in politics. And when I say politics, you know what I'm talking about? Local politics. Somebody has to figure out, has to be responsible for our schools, our hospitals. These are local political issues. We don't need everybody to be president. Lord knows we need some council people. We need some people that will represent us, who are articulate, went to school, come on. And how do we get to do that? Please don't go to jail. Can I ask you all? On spring break, do not get busted. You know what I'm saying? Because literally, I mean, it's a little funny, but you already know how easy it is for you to be taken off the count, either at school or in life. I truly am asking you to look at me and like me this much. Like me this much that you will choose life. Let me tell you something. It's harder to live than it is to die. Much harder. You know, we have a habit when we get mad. When they fire us, kick us out the class or the school. If they kick you out of school, keep trying. I don't care nothing about that. You just get your little sorry self up and try to get in another. Kick it back. You know what I mean? I mean, and that really, literally, everything's got to be like that. Everything's got to be like that. Everything must be like that. Because if we allow ourselves to accept less from ourselves, please leave me alone about somebody else. From ourselves, if we allow ourselves to expect less from ourselves, we have shamed this lady right here, Sojourner. I ain't even gonna mention Fannie Lou Hamer to you. Y'all know about Fannie Lou Hamer? Now don't y'all mess with Fannie Lou. Don't shame her. You understand? We can't shame people who tried when it was harder than it is for you. You got everything. You got everything. I'm staying at the Hermitage. Read the book there, and it says it was built in what, 19? Now, do you think in 02 I could be there? Can we just speak on that? You think they let me sit in and be in the room? Nice room, I got beautiful, huge, beautiful look out on the state. Not gonna happen. Things have changed, but things will go quickly backwards if you don't get on your job. We have, and I say we for all things, good and bad, we have already given up many rights that we already fought for. Do we understand that? Now I want us to be clear that no one took them from us, because I don't want to hear the whine. I told you that. I don't want to hear us whining. No one took it from us now. Gave them back. Now, why do we give things back? Lazy. And I don't mean lazy. What I'm talking about, lazy, not the body. How about this up here? Huh? Boy, look here. Wake that brain up. Wake it up. It's too many breaks. Y'all having too many brain breaks. You can't have another brain break till you're 35. Too much off time. It's really serious for you. I'm 60. It is fully expected that I won't be here for the next 20 years.
Whatever.
No, whatever. Yeah. But you But you have in front of you many years. You can change things. And it's really as simple as, I'm a recovering addict. Did I tell y'all that? I am a recovering addict since 1991. And let me tell you, what works for me, what I'd like to suggest to you is do your whole life like this. Be quiet. First things first. What does that mean? What, you know which problem you deal with? The first one on your plate. First, what's right in front of you, handle that right there. And then handle the next one. And one thing at a time. One day, one thing, one all of that at a time. You can accomplish a lot with those simple little tools, y'all. And you ain't even got to be that crackhead to do it like me. I had to go all the way down, I always say, 5, 15, about 20 miles underneath the New York City metal garbage can that's eroded at the bottom. Where's she at? You know that garbage can? You know those garbage cans, yeah. Don't you? Mm-hmm. I was about 15 miles underneath that garbage can. Yes, with my foolishness. And I was saved. If you have someone in your family, I know you got that too. On the drugs, you know, they stay everywhere. And they don't care about no color either, no class, no, don't care about none of that. But I also remember to pray for them, to keep a hard line on what's right and what's wrong. You know, we like to coddle. Coddling didn't help me one bit. I'd still be out there using. But my son did hard love on moi. Yes, wouldn't give me a dime. Mm-mm. And look at here, I didn't get a dime from him until I had been recovered about 9 months or so. And after that, he had a little empathy for me, you know. But that was good. That was the best thing for me, because I love my son. It mattered to me what he thought about me. You understand? But it would have mattered all that time. It didn't do nothing. Only when he put a wall between he and I. That wall was important. I recommend that wall to any of you and your loved ones. You know, put that wall up. You continue to do the right thing. Be there for them when they have that bottom and get finally someplace. Have a number for them to call when they really are ready, you know, because we all know nothing will happen until then. But if it happened for me, it could happen for anybody. I want you to know that I weighed 90 pounds when I came crawling in off the streets, which is where I was, on the streets, rode cross country on a bus from San Francisco to a Port Authority bus station. Horrible trip. It's in the book. I won't renew it for you, but you know, the best thing that could have happened to me was all the trial and all the trouble that I went through that I could get to this place. And in this place, I find that I'm able to do much more productive work, and I'm able to be much more helpful than I was when I was angry. So I think I finished. Did I miss something?